This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron Corn Herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than with any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials. The sun is shining, and it's a pretty glorious day over much of the Corn Belt. Well, it's glorious unless you've still got corn in the field and you're waiting for things to freeze up. And I'm guessing it's worse yet for growers in Michigan and Wisconsin, where there are still plenty of beans to harvest.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Kent Beadle from the Russell Group. And right after the news, Varsity Joe Vaklevic from Standard Grain lends perspective on today's market action. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie.
Wow. All right, yeah. Davis, thank you so much. And
everybody's
thank you
very
for
excited
joining us today.
Yes, very excited.
For the second hour of AgriTalk. Mm-hmm. I'm Chip. Yep. That's Davis.
Yes.
And corn and soybeans, they really didn't do a whole lot today. Did you notice?
I didn't notice. No, I was busy. I've opened up the studios here to take tickets for the island.
Oh.
Apparently there's a rush to get back to Chip's Island.
Well,
but maybe I'm on the wrong show. I don't know.
As the boat is deboarding.
Uh-huh. Excuse me. Sorry. Move
that over. Make sure that you pass out the Mai Tais and the fresh pineapple, okay?
Mai Tais?
We want to make sure everybody's happy.
Mai Tais? I thought they were your ties.
This USMCA thing is a little weird, isn't it?
It's very weird. Very weird.
It has been for a while, and all of a sudden, you know, and I'll admit, I may be standing on the rail of the boat waving at people as they're getting on the island right now, waiting for the boat to leave.
Uh-huh. You never know.
Yeah.
This could all change tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's why we do it live, you know, baby. There's only one way to stay on top of it all.
Right. Are you kidding me?
What?
John Harith, news director for Farm Journal, just says, domestic beer only on your island. Well, on my island, what makes it domestic beer? I mean, is it Red Stripe?
Ooh, good question.
Is it El Presidente?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, hey.
Is it Labatt's Blue, perhaps? Let's all have a Molson, eh?
It may be. Gosh, I'm telling you. Corn, soybeans, little changed. Wheat just got thrashed. Get it? Live cattle mixed, feeder cattle mixed, and lean hogs got back all of yesterday's losses plus some.
Okay.
Okay. Let's get to it. What was moving them around?
Well, Chip, selling pressure in winter wheat started in soft red futures with professional trading funds rolling out of long positions. Yeah. The drop through last week's high in March SOW futures at 535 triggered aggressive selling. The contract has now erased half of last week's price gains, raising the risk of follow-through sellings as funds exit long positions. Underpinning wheat prices are rising global wheat prices in the export market. Russia this week sold nearly 300,000 metric tons of wheat to Egypt at prices $2 to $3 above the previous sale. Mm-hmm. March hard red futures were 14.75 cents lower, 422.5. March soft red futures dropped 12.75, 530.5. March spring wheat 3.75 higher, 513.5. Chip.
Yeah, you still got that March 20 SRW at 525.25 is what it was on the close. Sorry. The thing there is that we are continuing to see that export market just kind of inch to the upside. And I think it's really positive news.
Oh, great.
Or what could be positive news, and it should help that market find its footing sooner rather than later.
Okay, just not today, apparently.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the setback in wheat prices anchored corn prices. After opening about steady, March corn futures once again pushed higher to test resistance at 385. And at that resistance, once again, held strong. USDA says corn harvest was 89% complete as of December 1. That's 9 points behind the five-year average and suggests nearly 1.4 billion bushels of corn left in the field at the start of December. North Dakota still has 64%. Wisconsin has one-third of the corn crop still to harvest. March corn futures were 0.75 cents lower, 381 1/4. May corn firm 0.75 cents to 387 1/4. December 2020 corn closed at 392 1/4, up a penny on the day.
Yeah, two-thirds. About two-thirds of that corn crop up in North Dakota is still in the field. I know Kent wants to talk about that. Kent Beadle from Russell Consulting Group wants to talk about what the impact of that late harvested corn, you know, stretching out the harvest and what's going to be the impact on quality. We'll talk about that later with Kent.
Very good. Well, bean harvest as of December 1 was 96% complete. That's 3 points behind the five-year average, and Wisconsin and Michigan are the furthest behind the average bean harvest pace, with 14 to 15% of the bean crop still in the field. Bean prices opened higher but struggled to hold on to those gains. January futures have now posted a lower high in 11 consecutive sessions, but the contract is trying to reject a full test of support at the September low of 865. January bean futures a half cent higher, 871 even. July beans firmed a half cent to 914. November 2020 beans closed at 925.5, up 0.75 cents. Is it kind of a let's get it over with already and test that support type of deal?
That's kind of what it feels like, but you know, it does feel like it's kind of building base in here too. Let's go ahead and bring in Joe Vaklovic. We'll get to the livestock comments here in the next segment. Joe Vaklovic, Standard Grain. Joe, there's the question from Davis for you. I mean, are we going to get all the way down there and fully test that 865 low?
Oh, I think it's very possible. I mean, you're talking about, you know, a few cents at this point.
Yep.
It seems like the bean market and the fund position in the bean market has very much tracked the sentiment regarding the trade situation. You know, when we thought we were going to sign a deal on November 15th, that's when the funds were long. That's when the market was up. And now that things have kind of soured and today Trump, you know, talking about a deal maybe not until after the election, we've gone right back the other way.
Yeah, it is really tough to judge what's going to be happening next year on the trade front. You mentioned the fund positions, Joe. You got to have a program to know who the players are. Luckily, we got the CFTC report. It's a bit dated, but boy, the funds really made a switch in wheat, didn't they?
They did, and you know, they're pretty heavy short the row crops now. I think that was the biggest one week instance of selling we've seen in soybeans futures and options combined, I think, on record. So that's a big shift. In corn, they're getting pretty heavily short, and you know, this all kind of lines up to me in the row crops at least for a seasonal rally, because typically in corn especially, we'll rally out of the first week in December after first notice day, and this year could be no different. It's kind of set up that way.
Okay. What about the seasonal on beans? What would that suggest?
It's not as clear, but I would imagine that if we see some sort of sharp rally, and it doesn't have to be a sharp rally, it could be a slow rally over the course of 3 or 4 months, that is not unprecedented. I would imagine that the beans dig themselves out here. But the beans, what we need to see is export demand, and if China's really filled that 10 million metric ton quota, I don't know what happens here the next couple months.
Well, if they really have filled that quota, I'd sure like to see a few more beans leaving the country, right?
Yeah, that would be good, and you would think that would be something we would see here the next few weeks, I would imagine.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Corn demand domestically, you feeling better about it?
Much better. Export's been good the last 2 weeks. I think that's 8 consecutive weeks of better ethanol output. So, yes, it's bottomed.
Yeah, good. Good stuff, Joe. Thank you so much, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Yep, see you, Chip. Bye.
All right, that is Joe Vaklovic with Standard Grain. Coming up next, we're going to have a conversation with Kent Beadle. Kent is the Director of Risk Consulting Services for the time being, Russell Consulting Group. We'll fill you in on that next, right here on AgriTalk. Today I'm joined by Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Steve, we can all agree that saving money is great, but sometimes the appeal of saving money up front baits us into spending more in the long run and jeopardizing farm finances. How can growers avoid falling into that trap? And let's talk about it as it pertains to corn herbicides.
Sure. We've seen and we've had customers even tell us that paying a little more up front for a quality herbicide can save you money in the long run. And that seemed to be even more apparent during the tough season we just had, as you know. And everybody knows the most expensive herbicide you can buy is the one that doesn't work.
Yeah. Steve, what are some of the problems growers can run into if they skimp on their herbicides?
Yeah, there's both short-term and long-term issues. Short-term, you can have shorter residual control, which can cause weed escapes, and that can lead to more money being spent on other treatments or rescue treatments. And you get reduced yield with early season weeds competing with the crop for water, sunlight, and nutrients. And then longer-term, you can build up that seed bank, and you can also increase your chance of developing resistance, and these can really cost you down the road.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's a lot to consider, though. What corn herbicides do you recommend growers consider for 2020?
Yeah, good question, Chip. Only Acuron corn herbicide unlocks your full yield potential because it controls those tough weeds other products are missing. And when you see it used at pre-emergent application at full label rates, Acuron's going to help growers find 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. So that means even though you're investing a little more up front, you're going to get that back plus some more at the end of the season.
What is it about Acuron, Steve, that makes it have such a positive impact on yield?
Well, it starts with the unique active ingredient, bicyclopyrone, which when combined with the other three active ingredients, it just delivers a higher level of weed control and more often. Yeah. And better weed control leads to higher yield potential.
Right. Very cool. Thank you so much, Steve. That was Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, talking to us about how it's worth spending a little more up front on an effective corn herbicide like Acuron. Just a reminder to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted use pesticide.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Picture yourself driving the tractor of your dreams, creeping up and down the rolling hills, enjoying an incredible sunset, and feeling satisfied that you are able to finally find your dream tractor at a reasonable price. Visit MachineryPete.com for the best selection of used tractors, skid steers, mowers, and more. We've revolutionized searching for equipment online. Find exactly what you're looking for quickly and easily. Your next piece of equipment is only a click away on MachineryPete.com. Visit MachineryPete.com now.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. Dalaro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. Dalaro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. Dalaro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
This just in from the front lines of the fight against tough weeds in soybean fields. Growers have taken the next step with the ultimate secret weapon. Fierce brand herbicides from Valent USA. These pre-emergence herbicides protect soybean fields with multiple effective modes of action, residual control that lasts up to 8 weeks, and fierce resistance management to help you win the battle against resistant weeds and the war. Ask your retailer or visit valent.com/fierce to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Dude, chill out. It's okay, man.
You see what he's doing here, though, Chip?
Yeah.
It's Freak on a Leash is what it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
We were accused of being freaks just ahead of the show.
Freaks.
Freaks.
Yeah.
I am not an animal.
Oh my goodness.
Maybe
gracious.
I am. I don't know.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I am your host, Chip Flory. That guy there, Davis Michelson.
Here's the thing. If we are some kind of freaks, if we are some kind of freaks, you and me, right? And Soylent Green is people.
Oh, jeez.
I think we're in the clear. I think we're in the clear. I mean, who wants who wants to eat that? But then, you know what?
Yeah.
Then you're going to get eventually down the line, you're going to get these people who are more enlightened, and they're like, I'm a freakitarian. I only eat freaks. Why would you eat anything else? Soylent Green is people.
Freak.
Yes.
Stop it.
They're mixing
it. Let's talk about the protein markets quick.
Let's do.
Let's talk about the protein markets quick.
Oh, for Pete's sake. Oh, you mean me. February live cattle
Yes.
Future. I thought we were going to go to Kent. I can't wait for his analysis. February live cattle futures have found support at one-time resistance at 125 in back-to-back sessions. That helped the contract to once again recover from early session lows. February cattle futures were 15 cents lower, 125.65. April cattle futures firmed 2.5 cents to 126.22.5. January feeders gained 22.5 cents to 142.37.5. And on the snout side, finally, February lean hog futures recovered all of yesterday's sharp losses following comments from a Chinese ag official that the country will step up purchases of pork in the fourth quarter. February hogs were 222.5 higher, 68.37.5. April hogs up 170, 74.27.5.
Yeah.
There you go.
But here we are. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in the fourth quarter. We're
I was going to say.
Two-thirds of the way through the, through the fourth quarter.
We got like 3.5 weeks left in the fourth quarter. And that 1 week is completely lost.
Yeah, they have stepped up their purchases, though. So, I mean, he's not joking. He's not joking. Hey, today's guest, I know that he would love for you to call in, ask any question that you've got about what's going on in the markets, what's going on with risk management. Give us a call. It's 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us. And when you do, include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. Kent Beadle, Director of Risk Consulting Services for, as I said earlier, in the time being, Russell Consulting Group. Kent, how are you? It's good to talk with you.
I'm doing great today, Chip. Thanks for having me on the program, although I am not prepared to talk about Soylent Green or Soylent Green futures, although I am old enough to remember the movie.
Soylent Green futures.
Do you ever think there will be a day when they'll trade Soylent Green futures? I mean,
I sure hope not.
What a dismal world that would be.
That would be tough.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So what's up with the name change, Kent?
So we made an announcement yesterday with our associates, and we're going to be telling the world here very soon, and we're going to tell the world right now that the Russell Consulting Group is becoming Agsurian Risk Consulting, a service of CHS Hedging, powered by the Russell Consulting intelligence that we've been using for all these years. We have a big conference tomorrow with our clients here in Minneapolis in association with the CHS annual meeting, and we're going to be kind of spilling the beans then, but since we've had the opportunity to be on your show today, we're going to let the world know just a little bit early.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah, Agsurian Risk Consulting.
Yes, sir.
I got to believe that the basic service, the base service of Russell Consulting is going to remain very similar through this, isn't it?
We are going to do everything that we do today for our clients, and as we talked with our associates yesterday, there's a few things that we're going to try to do even better, and we're always trying to grow. We made this name change because there was some confusion in the industry, especially with our member owners, as we had a sort of a staged approach of ownership into the Russell Consulting Group, whether or not this was really a CHS product. And so We're going to put some marketing muscle behind this and make sure that there's no confusion in the industry. But we are going to continue to do financial analysis and marketing for our clients to try to provide them the gross dollars per acre required to provide that return on assets and equity that it takes to grow a business in agriculture.
Okay. You know, Kent, there's these are difficult in trying times.
Sure. I don't,
you know, this is that's an easy one, but you're suggesting that there may be a way to actually grow what we've got going here in the midst of all this. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, you know, certainly you can't achieve a plan without making a plan. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we're doing with our clients every year is sitting down with their financials, taking a look at what we did well last year and what we can do better. We focus on things like machinery cost per acre, labor cost per acre, things that they can control. We can't control things that we can't control, and market prices and the fact that we've had, you know, five consecutive years of above-trend crops and below normal prices, certainly relative to the period of, you know, 2010, 11, you know, that through that 2013, 14, that we can't control.
Right.
But we can use the seasonality in the marketplace. We can keep a good eye on our margins. We can become more efficient on the farm in order to try to get a return that is appropriate for the kind of marketplace that we're in today. And that's what we're trying to help people do.
Very good. This is Kent Beadle here with us on AgriTalk today. Kent, you mentioned something there. You were talking about drilling costs down to the level of a per acre analysis. Is that as deep as you recommend we go, or do we like to go as deep as we can, maybe down to the per bushel sort of level when we're looking at our overhead costs?
Well, when we look at gross dollars per acre to achieve a return, you know, one of the things that does imply is that gross dollar is made up of both the bushels and the price.
Okay.
And oftentimes bushels are higher, mm-hmm. Price can be lower and vice versa. And so, you know, trying to maximize that gross dollars per acre is really the way that we like to approach things because, you know, let's face it, if you have a better than normal crop, you're likely going to market some of those bushels at a below average price because you're going to have to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just out of necessity.
Just out of necessity and the fact you're going to have to sell some grain in harvest type markets.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. One of the things that we like to stress on this show is to avoid, especially in times of trouble, you know, nobody has a problem talking to their banker when things are really good. You're making $6 corn. It's not a problem. Let's breeze into the bank. Let's see how they're doing today. In a lower price environment, a lower return environment, it just becomes that much more important to maintain those lines of communication, like you said, with financiers and to keep that plan going. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, one of the things that bankers really like is when they work with us or other people in our business that, you know, helping that grower make that plan. Because, again, it's hard to achieve a plan if you haven't made one. Mm-hmm. And if a banker sees that we have an objective and that we have a marketing plan designed to achieve an objective, that banker is going to have a little more confidence. And if there's a track record of some success, and even in some of these tougher times, we're able to maintain our equity base or not drill into it too doggone far,
right?
That provides some comfort to the banker as well.
Sure. We're coming up on time here, but how rigid do bankers want that to be, or do they want to leave a little flex in the plan?
Well, I think they'd like it to be rigid. The bankers that I know all would prefer to be more rigid than less.
Yeah.
But if they know that you're working with someone who has your interest at heart and is doing a good job, sometimes they allow for a little more flexibility. That's what I found in the past.
because these aren't static markets. We're not living in a static environment here, are we, Kent?
No, and and in fact, these are very tough years, as everyone knows. Yeah. And we're all doing our very best to keep these farmers alive and keep them growing.
Absolutely. Kent Beadle from the Russell Group. We'll have more with Kent when we come back right after these quick words here. Thanks for joining us on AgriTalk. I'm going to see if I can find where Chip went, too. Stay tuned.
Mr. Chairman, as a corn root, I speak for millions of my kind who can't be here to defend themselves. Pests are stalking our stocks and undermining our roots. But we can elect to protect with a legacy of strength. Punchovotivo 2.0 seed treatment system increases nearby microbial activity to help us grow stronger. That's smart. Ladies and gentlemen, please, this is a corn roots movement. Ask your BASF seed advisor about Punchovotivo 2.0 seed treatment. Always read and follow label directions.
5 conferences, 1 location, something for your entire team. Get ready. The 2020 Top Producer Summit is set for January 27th through the 30th in Chicago. This year's summit is a combination of the 5 highly regarded top producer conferences: Top Producer Seminar, Executive Women in Agriculture, Tomorrow's Top Producer, Farm Journal Legacy Project, and, for the first time, the Farm Journal Hemp Summit. Register today for Top Producer Summit at tpsummit.com.
It's time for AgriTalk's Tech Talk. Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Vaught joins us. Dan, what's the market move that matters the most today?
Hey, Chip, I'm looking at January natural gas futures today. After declining from late last winter into late summer, the January natural gas future had inhabited a wide trading range between $2.50 and $3 per 10 million BTUs through mid-autumn. Talk of cold weather likely powered sizable rallies in September and early November. However, with the latest round of winter weather ending early this week, the door was open to a big breakdown last Friday. The contract dulled 22 cents to 228.10, which easily marked a fresh low for the Jan future. It bounced yesterday and today, retesting the 250 level before setting back once again. This is not a pretty pattern and suggests a potential for a bearish follow-through.
Wow. All right. Hey, man, cheaper to heat the house. I love it. Thank you, Dan. That is Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Vaught. Pro Farmer members, be sure to check ProFarmer.com daily for your advice updates.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit TryProFarmer.com and get a generous 1 month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit TryProFarmer.com right now. That's TryProFarmer.com.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
Commodity Classic is unlike any other event in agriculture because it's created by farmers for farmers. Farmers determine the entire schedule, from the educational sessions to the trade show to the entertainment. Your experience is focused on the questions you have, the challenges you face. You'll walk away with answers, ideas, and a renewed energy about your operation, because farmers just like you have made sure you will. See your future clearly at Commodity Classic in San Antonio, February 27th through 29th. Visit CommodityClassic.com.
For the first time ever, Hemp College will be co-hosted with AgTech Expo, and Indianapolis will be the one location for both technology and hemp production. The Hemp College panel of experts will cover a variety of topics focused on agronomics and marketing of industrial hemp. Then switch into AgTech Expo with more than 25 educational breakout sessions covering precision ag, usable data, machinery demos, sustainable technology, and more. Sign up for both events now at farmjournalagtech.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm back, Davis. I'm back.
I'm so glad.
Yes, I'm glad everybody is back. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Chip. That's Davis. We're talking to Kent Beadle today. Before we get back to the conversation with Kent, let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed.
Sure thing. Well, March hard red futures were 14¾ cents lower at 422.5. March soft red futures dropped 12¾ cents to 530.5. March corn futures were 0.75 cents lower at 381¼. May corn firmed 0.75 cents to 387¼. I think that March hard red is at 425, isn't it?
Yes.
Now that I think
yes.
about it, I did make a note
yep.
there. January bean futures 0.5 cent higher, 871 even. July beans firmed 0.5 cent to 914. Feb cattle futures 15 cents lower, 125.65. Jan feeders gained 22.5 to 142.37.5. And Feb hogs were 222.5 higher, 68.37.5. There's your quick market recap. Let's try it again, buddy. What do you say?
I say we go for it. Thank you so
All
much,
right.
Davis.
You bet.
All right. Kent Beadle is the Director of Risk Consulting Services for soon-to-be Agurian Risk Consulting. And Kent, sorry about the technical difficulties there. Let's get into what's going on in these markets. What is it? 11%. As of Sunday, 11% of the U.S. corn crop was still out in the field. A lot of
right.
it is in the area where it's going to be toughest, where they've gotten
yeah.
covered up with snow. What's the prognosis
yeah.
here?
Yeah, certainly we do an awful lot of business up in this area. And, you know, North Dakota, of course, is probably the poster child for
yep.
not getting things harvested. It's been extraordinarily tough. There still is a lot of snow. We only picked up 6% of the corn crop last week.
Yeah.
And, you know, the truth of the matter is that farmers up there have done the math. They've looked at the crop and they've said, you know what? It doesn't make sense to go out and get it, to even try to go out and get it. The moistures are still too high. They're running 28 to plus 30%. When the growers are trying to harvest this stuff, they're finding out that they're making extraordinarily large amounts of FM, 6 to 10% or more. And then they're having to spend an arm and a leg to dry it because of the propane situation, although that situation is starting to ease.
Yeah.
But I know growers who have propane in their tanks ready to go and still won't take the corn out because
right.
it's just not ready to go. What we believe is going to happen is they're going to let this corn winter. They're going to try and get after it here in the spring or possibly February, March, depending on if we have a nice period where things melt a little bit and they have a chance to get out and get it. And hopefully, naturally, this corn will dry down some.
Yep.
And they will be able to get it and maybe even pick up a little bit of test weight because the test weight's been the other issue. A lot of yep. this corn is running 48 to 51 pounds.
Jeez. Yeah, it is a tough situation up there. And, you know, you leave it in the field so that you don't have to put it in the bin because if you did put it in the bin, Kent, it's not going to store
yeah.
worth a dang.
No, it's really not. And, you know, that leads to the conversations I've been having with a lot of growers up in this area about storability of their crop and the current basis levels.
Yeah.
And, you know, we believe that there are going to be a lot of growers who are going to be monitoring their bins actively, as they should, and probably are not going to want to carry this corn into spring planting or into the summer months because it's just not going to hold up.
Right.
So I think what's going to happen is you're likely going to see an awful lot of this off-grade corn move maybe late February in through March before April spring planting. And yet the basis levels are really good right now. And, you know, I'm telling clients, take a look at those basis levels. Take
yep.
a look at those ethanol bids and maybe start moving this corn sooner rather than later. And then, you know, even though the board price is not where we want it to be, there's always things that we can do to get re-ownership of the futures
right.
market.
Right. Okay. How widespread do you think this issue is, Kent? Does it get down into Iowa, Illinois, over into Indiana, Ohio?
There's certainly corn in Illinois that was planted very late that we have heard is having this problem of getting
yep.
it fully dried down and is still sitting out there. You know, just across the board to see an Iowa harvest
yeah.
progress at 92%, well, that's, you know, that's not terrible, but it's certainly 8% of the crop, and that's, you know, that's generally good land and good bushels, and, you know, there's some obvious risk out there for those bushels. And I would tell you that some of those bushels are in the, you know, eastern part of the state, which is proximate to some of the problems that you're having in Illinois.
Right.
So the problem is actually quite widespread. And, you know, my thought about the problem itself is that, you know, this is going to be a test weight issue and a quality issue. And, you know, the truth of the matter is you hear estimates off of the 11% not harvested that represented somewhere between 1.4 and 1.6 billion bushels. I wonder if it's not the lower end of that or even less because of the test weight.
Right.
And I wonder if the USDA is going to be able to pick up on all of this for that January crop report. I'm not sure that they will. And I think it sets us up for some very potential bullish stocks reports as you get into maybe the June report and certainly the September report.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And when you go out and you start measuring bins and a 50,000 bushel bin is full, but it's only got, you know, 42,000 in it. That's your test weight issues right there. And it turns into issues down the road as well through conversions. I mean, it takes more of that lower quality corn to make a pound of meat. It takes more of it to make a gallon of ethanol. Not only is it potentially a smaller crop, we're going to use it more aggressively because of the conversions.
That's exactly correct. And so if you go back and remember maybe the last time that we had a somewhat similar situation, 2009, and we had that June crop report that, you know, we lost 300 million bushels on that report. And that was really the beginning of, you know, the next big bull market that we saw in our marketplace was a, you know, we lost 300 million bushels, and then we had, you know, some lower yields for 3 years in a row, and there you go, we had some great prices. I can't say that I know that's going to be the outcome, is that we're going to have some huge futures rally as a result. Obviously, we've got some issues on the export side right now that we have to deal with, although I think that's going to get better. But our biggest problem there is going to be being able to sell the quality that we have. That is a big concern of mine. But ultimately, I do think that this balance sheet is going to turn out to be quite a bit tighter than what the USDA is printing today. And
okay,
I think we're going to have to reflect that in the marketplace.
Okay. Corn exports get better. Is it because of just straight up demand or because we get some trade deals done?
You know, I'm not sure about we would love to get the trade deals done, right? And I think there's been some optimism on USMCA, and as we get through the week, we hope that we have something there. The Chinese have not been buying a lot of U.S. corn, but at some point in the future, I still think they would like very much to buy U.S. corn. Ultimately, I just think the demand around the world is going to be there for the corn that's out there. I mean, clearly, you can see that we've taken the Brazilian crop and sucked that down an awful long ways because their prices have gotten much more expensive. We are more competitive in the export market. Again, our biggest issue is making the specs that the Taiwanese and the Koreans would like to have right now.
Right.
Ultimately, it's very possible that they might have to relax a little bit on their specs because I'm not sure where they're going to buy what they need.
Interesting. All right. Kent, you mentioned the strong corn basis that we've got and that it needs to be a consideration in your marketing plans.
Yeah.
Has the futures market accounted for that strong basis?
You know, I was doing some work on this here just last week, and I was thinking, well, we've got an off-quality crop, and, you know, you can deliver threes against the futures market, and normally we don't worry about it, and you're going to get twos if you take delivery. This year you're going to get threes. The only thing about that is the truth is that the difference between twos and threes for FM and shrunken and broken kernels is only 1%. Okay? And right now, the average basis here in the month of November is currently about 25 to 30 cents a bushel above what it's been for the last 5 years in November into early December. And so, and we're not talking about 25 cents a point for FM right now. So the truth of the matter is, I think we've been going down recently because of grower pricing of basis contracts. And that pressure is off of us right now. I really believe that we're going to have a reasonable post-harvest rally. What I've been telling clients is that in each of the last 5 years, July futures have rallied a minimum of 47 cents from the harvest low and a maximum of 98 with an average of 69 cents. And all of those years were above trend crops with carryouts 1.7 to 2.3. We should be able to get a similar type rally off the lows this year.
Good stuff, Kent. Man, you packed a lot of comments and a lot of thought into a short period of time right there, sir. Thank you so much.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be on the program, Chip. Thank you so much.
You bet. That is Kent Beadle, Director of Risk Consulting Services for the soon-to-be Axurion Risk Consulting. Davis and I are going to wrap up today's second hour of AgriTalk next.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor and AgriTalk Market Analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarm.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
Five conferences, one location, something for your entire team. Get ready. The 2020 Top Producer Summit is set for January 27th through the 30th in Chicago. This year's summit is a combination of the five highly regarded top producer conferences, Top Producer Seminar, Executive Women in Agriculture, Tomorrow's Top Producer, Farm Journal Legacy Project, and, for the first time, the Farm Journal Hemp Summit. Register today for Top Producer Summit at tpsummit.com.
Pivot BioProven is the first ever nitrogen-producing microbe that supplies nitrogen directly to the plant, helping maximize yield. Just ask Zach from Oklahoma.
The average was about a 5 to 6 bushel an acre benefit. Not only is that more money in my pocket, but it's less money I had to spend on fertilizer and wear and tear on my side dressing sprayer.
Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, weather or not.
For the first time ever, Hemp College will be co-hosted with AgTech Expo, and Indianapolis will be the one location for both technology and hemp production. The Hemp College panel of experts will cover a variety of topics focused on agronomics and marketing of industrial hemp. Then switch into AgTech Expo with more than 25 educational breakout sessions covering precision ag, usable data, machinery demos, sustainable technology, and more. Sign up for both events now at farmjournalagtech.com.
We're saying thank you to our producers. Head on out to your local Titan Machinery location December 2nd through the 7th for the best savings of the year on everything from filters, oil and fluids, to shovels and coulters. Visit TitanMachinery.com/customer appreciation for more information about the discounts available on genuine Case IH parts. Beginning December 2nd, stock up and save. Titan Machinery, power and precision to grow. Learn more at TitanMachinery.com.
Are you over 50? Would you like to get up to 33% more income in retirement? Then call now for this free book, Annuity Do's and Don'ts for Baby Boomers, from a leading financial firm on maximizing your income in retirement. That's right, free. This free book reveals little-known truths about annuities in simple-to-understand terms that will help you make the right choices before buying an annuity. And it's free. As a bonus, we'll also throw in a free annuity rate report summarizing the rates and benefits from financially strong insurers.
Call 800-806-9013.
That's right, Annuity Do's and Don'ts for Baby Boomers and Annuity Rate Report, both absolutely free for calling today.
Call 800-806-9013. That's 800-806-9013.
Producers have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer. Increased income is possible using strategies suited to your goals and may require buying multiple annuities and holding them full term.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
Soylent greed. People.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis.
The dude played Moses. He wouldn't lie to us.
I don't think he's able to. That's right. Really good conversation with Kent. That reference to the 2009 crop, that always just makes me cringe, because that 2009-10 marketing season just made me crazy. You knew that the 2009 crop estimate was wrong. we just knew it. And it took a long time. It took a long time to figure it out. And I'm telling you, Davis, the influence was felt through the 10 crop when it came up a little bit short of expectations or short of where they wanted it to, quote unquote, wanted it to be.
Right.
It came up short in 10. The 11 crop was, you know, it, the influence was felt right until the drought of 2012. We were feeling the impact of those numbers from the 2009 crop. It was zero fun. Zero fun trying to figure out exactly what it all meant. So anyway, I hope we do not go through something similar for the 2019-20 marketing year, but it feels like we might be setting up for that.
Yeah, and I don't know. It seems like this year more than ever there is a whole lot more discontent with the numbers, a whole lot more
there
doubt
is.
With you know, and it's not just here, you know, around or at the tail end of harvest. It started right away in planting season. They're way off. We're never going to get that many X. Fill in the blank, you know, and it has just continued throughout the entire season this year.
Right. Oh yeah. The there's just very little trust in the numbers that are coming from USDA about the size of the 2019 corn and soybean crops.
Yeah, and you know, I even thought about it too when we were talking about China making pork buys.
Yeah.
And how they want to increase that in the fourth quarter. Well, what if we don't find out till the third quarter 2020?
Right.
You know, I mean, mysterious pork sales showed up somewhere and then we had to take this out of that. I mean,
right, the late reporting stuff has been kind of a pain in the butt. We've gone through two rounds of it. gone through two rounds of it. Hopefully we don't have another one to go through. Guys up in North Dakota, Wisconsin, Michigan, keep your chin up. And there are guys in across the Corn Belt that we need to give that advice to. But when you look at the amount of the corn crop that is left in the field in Michigan, North Dakota, Wisconsin, that's where the times of the toughest trying to figure out what you're going to do with that corn crop. And like Kent said, in many cases, the decision has already been made. You're not going to worry about it this winter. Let's wait until things start to change. Yeah. Cause you don't want to put it in the bin anyway. It ain't going to store worth a dang.
Yep.
National Weather Service. I'm going to just go over some of the things that I've been looking at today, if that's okay with you.
Very good.
Is that all right?
Yeah, I'm in.
All right.
Let's do it.
There was a pattern change in the 6 to 10 day and the 8 to 14 day. Yesterday, we were talking about above normal temperatures and above normal precipitation.
Yeah.
Today, in the 6 to 10 day for December 9th through the 13th and the 8 to 14 day for December 11th, December 11th through the 17th. Okay. We now have below normal temperatures expected across the entire Corn Belt.
What?
And above normal precipitation.
Oh,
so there you go. There
well,
you go.
Good thing we just went on a whole thing about how people don't trust the numbers.
Right, right. Here's another number for you, 11,700.
11,700.
Any guesses? Any guesses?
Metric tons of frozen beef.
No.
Waiting outside of Brazilian ports.
No, I am looking at Ethanol Producer Magazine and 11,700 comments filed on EPA's SRE proposal.
Ah.
So the comment period closed on Friday, November 29th. And when it closed, the 11,700 comments were filed. Now, that's on both sides. That's comments coming from both sides. And believe you me, there are comments out there that are supporting the EPA and their plans for how they are going to handle the SREs, which undoubtedly, based on the way that it is performed over the last 3 years, 4 years, if we see EPA's proposed rule go through, we're going to come up short of 15 billion gallons of blending. There's no question in my mind about it. We've got to go with the agreement that was struck between the White House, Senator Grassley, other farm state lawmakers, other farm state governors. There were many people involved in this, and one guy in the White House. And I hope the guy in the White House sent the memo to the guy at EPA, because there's some rules that need to be followed. Okay.
That EPA guy sounds like his job may be on the block here if this doesn't go the right direction.
That is exactly
we're hearing
right.
Hearing that from higher up in the chain. Remember, it started with Senator Joni Ernst.
Yep.
And didn't even Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds get in on that rhetoric a little bit, too? I'm not sure.
A little
sure,
bit,
but,
yeah.
But Grassley was talking about it yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt about it. And real quick, the Dow has recovered significantly from early losses. We are looking at a market that is off about 270 points in the Dow right now. Oh. But like I said earlier, they were off about 4.25 on President Trump's comments about tariffs on steel from Brazil, Argentina, and the China trade situation. We're out of time. Tweet of the day.
Today's tweets are brought to you by Impossible Soylent. Impossible Soylent is weirdos. It's weirdos. And now today's tweets. At Kayshawn Cauley, in the future, every billionaire will buy the presidency for 15 minutes. At Internet Hippo, exercise machine, set desired heart rate. Me, zero. At Max ROI Farmer, currently experimenting to see if I can annoy my children with early 2000s boy band music. Dude, if you can't make that happen, you're doing it wrong.
That's right. That's right. All right. Thank you so much for listening today. Thanks to Joe Baklavic. And to Kent Beadle for joining us tomorrow morning. Bob Dineen from the Renewable Fuels Association. And tomorrow afternoon, Bill Tierney from Ag Resource Company. Right here on AgriTalk.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. DeLauro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. DeLauro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. DeLauro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was the burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have Arc County right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.